This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 341, for the weekend of April 5th through April 7th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and this is Backseat Box Office, a podcast where we talk about movies, TV, and other stuff that we like, and we hope that you like too. Art, how's it going over there?
It is going good. I had my first day off in a very long weekend, because my birthday is coming up.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you, sir.
How many years young?
46.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. So, for those that haven't listened before or may not know, I say over there because Art records in Texas and we do this over Skype and I'm in Southern California. So, yeah, that was key information that we probably should have skipped. Okay. So anyways, the first segment of the show is that we talk about what happened at the box office last week, and we're just going to talk about last week, or last weekend. Because we haven't recorded in 3 weeks, I believe. And so let's confine this conversation to last weekend, which would be March 29th through March 31st. So here is the top five for that Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So number one, we have new release, Dumbo, made $46 million. At number two, we have Us in its second week of release at $33.2 million. That was a 53% drop from a week ago, but it total gross $127 million over a $20 million budget. Gotta love those horror movies.
Yeah.
At number three, in its fourth week of release, we have Captain Marvel at $20.7 million. And, we're not going to list a budget for that movie, but total gross over 4 weeks, $353 million. Could say $354, but domestic is a fair shade compared to, it's made $644 foreign. Only reason I bring that up is
wow.
Because it has bypassed $1 billion worldwide.
Yeah, so, yeah, there you go.
Wow. At number four, we have new release Unplanned, which is quite a drop from $20 million. It's at $6 million right now, $6.4 million. Came out on 1,000 screens, had a decent average, but I have no idea what this movie was about.
Me either.
It was unplanned and unadvertised. At number five, and then we have 5 Feet Apart, $6.2 million. That's in its third week release. Has grossed $35 million domestic. And there's your top five. Strangely, at number 10, The Beach Bum, starring Matthew McConaughey, which is supposed to be another stoner movie, $1.7 million on 1,100 screens. So, interesting release for that movie. But anyways, I'm sorry, you were going to say something?
Nothing. Nope, I lost my train of thought. But yeah, that's...
Come on, you're only 46. You don't get senior moments.
They've been coming, my friend, for some time. It's like I hit 40, and it was all like, 40, that's rough. But anyway, I wonder if they just kind of threw it out there because they had to, and it's just going to disappear real quickly because that seems like they didn't push that at all for The Beach Bum.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe they're hoping for like a Dazed and Confused situation where it's like a word of mouth.
Yeah, it just picks up. Thing. Or the whatchacallit was like that too. The one in Las Vegas.
Oh, Fear and Loathing. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
No. The very first in the bachelor party. Why am I blanking?
Oh, you're talking about Hangover. The Hangover.
The Hangover. Yeah, the Hangover.
Okay.
That had a slow start, and that one exploded.
Yeah.
Like late.
Yeah, that true.
Word of mouth. Word of mouth. Really. Very true.
All right, so that's going to conclude, but we have, or I'm sorry, that's going to conclude the first segment talking about the box office results. But usually we talk about weird genres of movies as viewed by Box Office Mojo. And since Dumbo was number one, I'm going to pick one of the genres that Dumbo is listed under, and that's family-remake movies. Okay, so according to Box Office Mojo, Dumbo may or was the number 17 or is the number 17 family remake movie. Would you like to hazard a guess without looking at it? What's number one? Family remake. Oh, and it does say in the little subtitle here, 1978 to present. That's kind of
It's
a weird line to draw, but
well, yeah,
yeah,
but I
okay.
like number one. So this is
Well, not.
highest growth.
Yeah, this is so there's two columns, lifetime gross theaters, opening in theaters. I'm sorry. Oh,
Okay.
lifetime gross and opening. I'm sorry, not theaters, because they list theaters as along with it.
Well, they're probably drawing the 1978 line because a lot of the like Disney's been remaking like crazy. I'm gonna go number one is Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast. I
It's
do
not
not think
considered.
that makes the cut.
Okay. Not family enough? Is it more kidsy? I don't.
That is a really interesting point. We're finding that some of these genres don't hold water, at least as far as our
No.
lists. Okay,
Right. I
so
mean,
number
is Pete's
one,
Dragon too old? Is they did
number
okay, go ahead,
one,
number one.
Jungle Book,
That was gonna be my next guess was Jungle Book.
364 million.
Okay.
So right now I'm trying to figure out, okay, why is Jungle Book on this list and not Beauty and the Beast?
Jungle Book is not a romance.
Well, no, it says family remake. That's all it says.
Right, I know, but I'm saying like Beauty and the Beast has more of a romantic air, and so maybe
So I
it's
guess
more
that's it.
focused
Maybe that's
on
not.
women,
So it's
girl,
not family. Okay,
less of a family thing,
so let's go
maybe.
further down the list, and it'll either prove or disprove your theory, which I think I'm going to lean more on the prove side. Two, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. That was 2005. Oh my God, 2005. 206 million. Number three, The Karate Kid.
Interesting. Okay.
That's the Jaden Smith, Jackie Chan, I believe. That was 2010, 176 million. And I'm gonna bypass some of the numbers just so we can kind of go through this faster. Doctor Dolittle 4, Cheaper by the Dozen 5.
Jeez.
101 Dalmatians 6, Freaky Friday, Flubber, Annie, The Pink Panther, with Steve Martin, Peach Dragon 2016, which you mentioned earlier, Race to Witch Mountain with The Rock, Parent
Wow.
Trap, Herbie, Fully Loaded, even though originally it was called The Love Bug. That was 2005 with Lindsay Lohan and Michael Keaton. The Shaggy Dog, Jungle to Jungle. I'm like, that was a remake. It says Little Indian, Big City. Dumbo at 17. Yours, Mine, and Ours. Mighty Joe Young. At Angels in the Outfield. Are We Done Yet? Which the original was called Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House.
Wow.
Now they call them Blandings. Okay, kind of ironic. Jungle Book. Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey, which was originally called The Incredible Journey. What a Girl Wants. The original movie was Reluctant Debutante. Debutante. Around the World in 80 Days. Flicka, which the original is called My Friend Flicka. Flipper. Tuck Everlasting. That Darn Cat. Miracle on 34th Street. Vice Versa. Lassie. Little Miss Marker. And 34, A Dog of Flanders, which was 1999.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
Oh, and there's even more at the bottom. Note, this is from Box Office Mojo. Sequels to remakes like 102 Dalmatians and Dr. Dolittle 2 are not counted as they are not remakes of specific movies in the past.
Right,
So sequels
okay.
do not count.
Sequels do not
Has
count.
nothing to do with Beauty and the Beast, but original movies with different titles than their remakes are listed in parentheses. If there are any movies that you think should be on this list, email us at mail@boxofficemojo.com. All right, so now we can get over, or we can close the book on this segment and move over to segment number two, which just happens to be what's coming out in the theater this weekend. And so there are two movies that are coming out. And Art, why don't you tell us about the first one?
Okay, the first one, Shazam. Currently 93% fresh on the tomato meter with 192 reviews counted. We all have a superhero inside us. It just takes a bit of magic to bring it out. In Billy Batson, Angel Asher's case, by shouting out one word, Shazam, this streetwise 14-year-old foster kid can turn into the adult superhero Shazam, Zachary Levi, courtesy of an ancient wizard. Still a kid at heart inside, a ripped godlike body Shazam revels in his adult version of himself by doing what any teen would do with superpowers. Have fun with him. Can he fly? Does he have X-ray vision? Can he shoot lightning out of his hands? Can he skip his social studies test? Shazam sets out to test the limits of his abilities with the joyful recklessness of a child. But he'll need to master these powers quickly in order to fight the deadly forces of evil controlled by Dr. Thaddeus Sivana Strong. Rated PG-13 for intense sequences of action, language, and suggested material. Genres action and adventures. Science fiction fantasy. Directed by David F. Sandberg. Written by Henry Gayden. Runtime 130 minutes. Who do we also have here? We have Jack Dylan Grazer. We have Jimon Hounsou. Faith Herman, Grace Fulton, Ian Chen, Jovan Armand, Marta Milans, Cooper Andrews, and Ron Cathus Jones. Oh, yeah. Interesting. So, yeah, I am so excited for this. I've been excited for this ever since the first trailer. So.
Now, you bring any Shazam baggage with you?
Oh, yeah, No. I mean, like, I watched some of the TV series from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just old enough to vaguely remember that. And it is, but other than that, I'm never one of these baggage people. I don't let them do what they're going to do. I just want them to tell a good, compelling story.
Okay.
I felt like DC really turned a corner with Aquaman. Mm-hmm. Getting away from the, you know, everything is dark and, you know, serious. And I think this is pushing that even further. And I think this is going to do really well. So, yeah, I am very excited to see this. And me and Aubrey should be going to see it tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if we're going to make the theater for this one. I might have watched Shazam back in the 70s. Was that more of like, Egyptian? Like they're, yes, Egyptian gods type thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I kind of remember that. So yeah, 93% is nothing to sneeze at. I don't think.
No, that is solid.
So what are some of the critics saying? These are two roundabout ways of saying they like the movie. Justin Chang from the LA Times, Shazam is hardly a solution, but at its best, it's just deft and clever enough to not feel like part of the problem. And then we go over to Joe Morgenstern, who is a much more seasoned critic from the Wall Street Journal. What Shazam lacks most obviously is gravitas and grimness, also bleakness, darkness, and relentless self-seriousness. In other words, it's terrific fun. But for every 93%, there's usually one or two people that didn't like it. So we have one is Barry Hertz from Globe and Mail. So beyond working as an advertisement for DC's other movies, Shazam also offers a stiflingly claustrophobic cinematic landscape, which has no point of reference outside of DC's own intellectual properties. Yeah, that's a 1.5 out of 4 stars for him. So, but good to see that's a minority opinion. So good. All right, so I'm going to tell you about the second movie that's coming out in the theater this weekend. So this is Pet Sematary. This one is 73% out of 90 reviews counted, so that's a fresh score, with a pretty good cushion, not a great cushion. So what is Pet Sematary about, if you didn't know? Based on the seminal horror novel by Stephen King, Pet Sematary follows Dr. Lewis Creed, played by Jason Clark, who, after relocating with his wife Rachel, played by Amy Simetz, and their two young children from Boston to rural Maine, discovers a mysterious burial ground hidden deep in the woods near the family's new home. When tragedy strikes, Lewis turns to his unusual neighbor, Judd Crandall, played by John Lithgow, setting off a perilous chain reaction that unleashes an unfathomable evil with horrific consequences. Your rating is R for horror violence, bloody images, and some language. Genre is horror. Written by Jeff Bueller and Matt Greenberg. Directed by Kevin Kolsch and Dennis Widmeyer. And there is a bunch of difficult to pronounce names other than names I announced already, so we're just not going to go into that. So, Pet Sematary, remake of a very popular, I don't know if it's that popular, but Stephen King novel. So, any interest in this one, Art?
My brother-in-law wants to go see it. He asked me if I would go see it with him, and I said absolutely. So I'll probably be seeing this as well. He's out of town this weekend, so it'll probably be next weekend. But yeah, I'll be seeing this. I remember the original. I watched it way back in the day. So.
Yeah, interesting with the critic blurbs that are here, 73%. So you should have 7 out of every 10 be a fresh one. But I count, let me see, one, two, it's almost split right down the middle for the ones that they're
Yeah,
for the.
that is weird.
Yeah. So starting with the Rottens, Peter Howell from the Toronto Star, Pet Sematary still isn't very scary, but it's gotten a lot more stupid. Ratings 1 point or 1 out of 4. Soren Anderson from Seattle Times should have left well enough alone. 1.5 out of 4. But Chris Nashawaty from Entertainment Weekly, directing duo Kevin Kolsch and Dennis Widmeyer get everything absolutely right in their bone-chillingly effective new remake. B plus. So you're probably, if you are on the fence about this one, you're probably not going to go see it. People that are going to go see it are probably in as soon as they saw the movie poster or the trailer.
The trailer, yeah, the trailer is, it comes across very creepy. It's interesting.
All right, so that is going to be it for our look for our look at last or this weekend's coming up movies. And so now let's move on over to share time. This is the part of the show where Art and myself talk about what we've been up to, like movies, TV, or other things as we see fit. And in addition to that, we also play voicemails from our listeners, and we have a voicemail from Tad with a very special guest. So let's get to that voicemail right now. So take it away, guys.
Hey guys, this is Tad calling in with what I've been watching, and I have my daughter Sabrina here with me, and we just went and saw Captain Marvel, and I thought it was pretty good. I liked it a lot, actually. It was a lot of fun, and we're real excited about the watch seeing Endgame now. All right, Sabrina, what do you think about the movie?
I thought it was awesome. I thought all the characters were really enjoyable. And I was impressed with how they managed to get so many scenes in the air, those in it. And just when Captain Marvel awakens her powers, that, made the movie.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome, and the special effects and the flying and stuff were pretty good too. All right, you got anything else you want to say, Sabrina?
Keep calm and keep watching movies.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you guys later, and thanks for the show. All right, bye-bye.
All right, thank you guys. I also will be registering an opinion pretty soon about Captain Marvel. So glad you guys liked it. And thank you so much for joining Tad on the voicemail, Sabrina. Hopefully we hear you again very soon. Okay, so Art, what have you been up to for 3 weeks?
Oh my goodness. 3 weeks. You know what? For it having been 3 weeks, I did not watch as much stuff as one would imagine. I finished the second season of Lucifer. And I'm really enjoying it. It's totally worth watching. It's really good. But I'm taking a break from it. There's still one more season that's available to stream. And I moved on to some other things. I watched the Love, Death, and Robots animated shorts that Netflix just did, the not safe for work adult content. They're all really good. I mean, I was really impressed. They just did Backseat Producers did an episode on it, and kind of broke down all the different episodes, and it was really worth watching. It's interesting. Netflix kind of just they got a bunch of different people together and said, here, make us a short, be about whatever you want, but Love, Death, and Robots is kind of the theme. So yeah, there was some really good ones that I liked a lot. But I'm always down for some robot action, especially when they're giant robots. We went as a family and saw Wonder Park. Me and Aubrey thoroughly enjoyed it. There was some themes that kind of, I think, put Brittany off, and she was not as enamored with it. But I thought it was absolutely wonderful, totally worth seeing. If you have small children or you like cartoons in general, it's worth going to see. And then I finally started Umbrella Academy. I'm only two episodes in. But I'm also thoroughly enjoying that. That got recommended to me by so many people. I figured it couldn't be wrong, and so far they are not. So, and that is also based on a graphic novel. I know somebody who read the three or four books that are out there and really enjoyed those as well. Felt like they stayed really close to the source material. So, and that is about all I can think of. That wraps me up at this time.
Hey, Aaron, hold on a second.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So what did I do the last 3 weeks? I think you ended up watching more stuff than I did. But I did get out to the theater. I watched a Marvel movie on Netflix. Not on Netflix. I watched the Blu-ray since I got it for my birthday. And we also went out to the theater and saw Captain Marvel. So I think I'm going to talk about Captain Marvel first. We went to see the IMAX version of Captain Marvel. Last time I took my son to IMAX, he had a headache, and we had to go see Winter Soldier on the regular definition. But I'm so glad that he was able to make through Captain Marvel. I totally agree with what Tad and Sabrina said. This movie was so much fun. And it's hard for me to put a finger on it, kind of thing. Exactly what makes this movie so much better than some of the other origin stories. I really like that it really got you immersed in the story really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
with the first act, and we're kind of figuring things out along with Carol, at certain points. It's no secret that they're going to hit you over the head with some 90s references, and there were a lot of good ones.
Mm-hmm.
I have a coworker that has not seen Captain Marvel yet, but I told her to pay attention to the search engine that Carol ends up using. I mean, because they did a good job of making sure it was time appropriate. At least I think it was. So spoilers for Captain Marvel, if you haven't seen it yet, probably want to fast forward, or maybe just fast forward or turn your sound down for like a minute or so. One of my favorite things that they did with this movie is the meta misdirection about the villain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that Mr. Mendelsohn has played a villain in every movie he's been in, except this one. And especially the demographics for this movie, for some of the audience, are probably going to be the same people that saw Rogue One, that he was the villain in. Also saw Ready Player One, he was also the villain in. It actually came to a point where my son goes, "Oh, he's the bad guy in everything," during the movie.
Yeah.
And the twist that happens,
right.
I thought was really good. Another thing that I really liked. I'm trying to remember the more cathartic scene in a Marvel movie than when Carol figures out that she can do her powers.
Yeah.
When the hair starts flying up and her eyes are white, I half wet myself when that scene was going down. And that part was done really well. I don't think Marvel's dumb that, she was full Captain Marvel for probably 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. No, not. Yeah.
We don't get too much of her.
Yeah.
At that point, probably because, we're probably going to get, well, I don't know how much we are going to get, but we're probably going to get a good portion of that for Endgame. things that I was okay with, and I know that this is going to be a contrary opinion to you. I could have done without the cat. I know everybody loves Goose.
The Flurkin.
But I felt like, kind of like Jar Jar in Phantom Menace was a replacement for the droids. I felt like the cat was a replacement for Groot.
Okay.
I don't know.
I, The cat was fan service. The cat was fan service.
No, I understand that.
So yeah.
I understand that. The whole part about connecting Nick Fury's accident, I didn't really need to know that.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because at the last game day that I had before we went to go see Captain Marvel, one of the guys said, "Oh, you know, you have to stay for the credit to see the post credits or the post credit scenes." And he was like, "We got to talk about the second one." And I was like, and after I watched the second one, I was like, "Really? He was excited about the second one?"
Yeah, I don't.
Is he really? I mean, is feline vomit like
part? He's of really the, into that.
He's really into that or something. And, you know, that's probably going to prompt another conversation. I thought the first one was so much more exciting.
Yes.
You know, he just shows up.
Right.
And I actually had one person, a very good friend of mine, who we've talked about almost every Marvel movie. The words came out of his mouth. There was a second post-credit scene. I was like, how many Marvel movies have you been to? How many times have they had more than one?
Yeah.
And you didn't see the second one? So, yeah, I almost dropped my phone. Because I was in the grocery store when we were talking about it. I almost dropped my phone. This lady was looking at me. I was, like, yelling. Can't believe it. Anyway. So, yeah, Captain Marvel, highly recommended. I mean, really, really good job. And if you're kind of a comics noob, kind of, look up the Easter egg YouTube video for Captain Marvel, because there's so much. I didn't think there was a whole lot, but there is so much that I missed, kind of thing. Not that I read any Captain Marvel at all, but yeah, I highly recommend Captain Marvel. Okay, so the other Marvel movie that I watched on Blu-ray, I finally got around to watching Ant-Man and the Wasp, because I had because people were talking about the post-credits scene in that movie as well, kind of thing. And so I enjoyed Ant-Man and the Wasp. There was a point where I got kind of disinterested in the whole Quantum Realm story about getting the original Wasp, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer's character.
Right.
And I felt like that they kind of gave the villain short shrift about. I think it was more of a thumbnail sketch of her motivations and what she was all about, kind of thing. I kind of felt like that they probably should have given her, you know, more time, or I don't know. I just felt like they didn't do a very good job with the villain.
Yeah, I could see that.
But it's a special movie when you get a line out of it that you're going to be quoting for pretty much the rest of your life. And so the truth serum scene. So when they give him the truth serum and he starts talking, and the guy says, "You put the quarter in, you're going to have to listen to the whole song."
Yep.
Oh my God. I'm going to be, you know, cause my spouse can be a little long winded at times, and that's sometimes what it feels like.
I'm the long-winded one over here.
Okay, all right. So, I enjoyed, and I'm forgetting his name. I enjoyed his character. They did a good job with the action sequences and that kind of thing. But I enjoyed this movie, you know, by itself, and of course how it connects to Endgame is going to be very interesting. So I'm a sucker for special features, and there's not a whole lot of special features for this movie, but there's one thing I want to go back to. I have never gotten choked up or cried during a Marvel movie until Captain Marvel. I don't know what it was. There might have been other things going on in my life at the moment, but when they did that reel of Stan Lee's cameos in the beginning,
Oh
my God, did it get to me?
Yeah.
And so, strangely enough, this next part I'm about to tell you happened before Captain Marvel, but on Ant-Man and the Wasp, they have a outtake reel of, and it's basically the linorama for Stan Lee's line in Ant-Man and the Wasp. And so, for those who haven't seen it or don't remember, he's about to get into his car, and then one of those discs lands on the car that miniaturizes it or shrinks it, kind of thing. And the line that they went with was, I know I had fun in the 60s, but now I'm paying for it.
Yeah.
He had a much better line. In my personal opinion, he had a much better line. Was, well, now at least I'm going to be able to park my car in San Francisco, which I thought was funny. But there's about, he did like 8 or 9 of them. But yeah, it's sad that, you know, because that, it's also my son's, one of my son's favorite part about all the Marvel movies is seeing where Stan Lee shows up, kind of thing. I think his favorite one might be Tony Stank from Civil War. So we miss you, Stan. Okay, I have one other thing, a quick mention. I'm getting to the point to where my son is behind where I was on classic movies. So we did watch Real Genius, which I think I talked about, or maybe not. But I decided that I had this Blu-ray, or I'm sorry, this DVD collecting dust, so I broke out Die Hard, the first one.
Wow.
And showed him Die Hard. I was cringed a little bit at the smoking. Like, he just lights up in the airport. Which, you know, is now...
Different world.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah. But the thing about Die Hard, as, you know, you watch Die Hard, what, maybe 25, 30 times on broadcast television or on cable kind of thing?
Yep.
You forget how much they cut out.
Yep.
And it's just little pieces when they edit for television. And just some of the lines that I can't believe they cut. Like when the deputy chief of police realizes that the FBI is about to show up. You know, he kind of tucks in his shirt, straightens his tie. And then the beat cop, Reginald Bill Johnson, goes, "Do you want a breath mint?" I don't remember that line, seeing it the 25 times when I watched it on TV. So I'm glad that, you know, sometimes I think about, you know, when you have clutter in your house, getting rid of the movies, but I'm glad that I still have those. So anyways, all right.
Yeah, see, I condensed everything down to like binders. Like I threw out all the boxes and inserts and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's all just DVDs and so now I still have all the same DVDs, but it takes up like, you know, a 1 foot by 1 foot cube.
Yeah, I should probably do that. All right, so that's going to end share time. So we have one segment left, and then we'll end the show. And that segment is the news section, where we talk about news and other things that might be happening that might be relevant to movies, TV, or other stuff. So, Art, what do you got?
Okay, so a surprise third player has entered the debate between Netflix and the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences over streaming service film eligibility at the Oscars. That player? The United States Department of Justice. Variety reports that the chief at the DOJ's antitrust division, Makan Del Rahim, has penned a letter to the AMPAS CEO, Don Hudson, in which he expressed concerns that the new rules would be written in a way that tends to suppress competition. In other words, it hints that rewriting the rules so as to exclude or limit the eligibility of specific streaming services could potentially violate antitrust laws. Del Rahim says, in the event of the Academy, an association that includes multiple competitors in its memberships, establishes certain eligibility requirements for the Oscars that eliminate competition without pre-competitive justification, such content may raise antitrust concerns. Accordingly, agreements among competitors to exclude new competitors can violate the antitrust laws when their purpose or effect is to impede competition by goods or services that consumers purchase and enjoy, but which threaten the profits of incumbent films. If the Academy adopts a new rule to exclude certain types of films, such as films distributed via online streaming services, from eligibility for the Oscars, and that exclusion tends to diminish the excluded film sales, that rule could therefore violate Section 1 of the Sherman Act. So I just think this is very fascinating. So the letter came in response to reports that Steven Spielberg is planning to push for rules changes to Oscar eligibility that restricts films that debut on Netflix and other streaming services around the same time that they screen in cinemas. So, yeah, the article goes on and on. Anybody who is as interested as I am can go into it and dig a little further. I just think that's very fascinating. You know, we've covered before streaming services being included in awards shows or lack thereof, like, you know, the whole Netflix thing with Cannes And now they're talking about, you know, maybe trying to push them out of the Oscars. I think it's just ridiculous. And so I think it's great that the DOJ is stepping in.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, very, I thought.
All right. So one thing that I'm still squaring with is that One Day at a Time got canceled. And so we always hear about, hey, let's... you know, maybe someone else will pick it up. It will show up here, it will show up there, and usually nothing ever happens. But apparently, they're thinking that it might have a chance to come back. And so this is from DarkHorizons.com. One Day at a Time, Nearing Salvation. The cancellation of Netflix's critically acclaimed multi-camera comedy series One Day at a Time was seen as a bad decision by the streamer, and there's been a strong campaign from fans that keep the series going. Vulture Report today reports that Sony, which produces the series, has received a bid from CBS for at least one more season of the series. Oh, sounds great, right? Not so fast. As part of its original deal with Sony, Netflix, and I think Netflix has this in most of the shows that they end up putting on their service. Netflix can prevent another streaming service from acquiring the show for the next 2 years. And despite series creator Norman Lear reaching out to Netflix, Netflix has reported not indicated any interest in letting CBS revive the series, but they can just let them out of the contract and they can show it wherever they want. But Netflix has kind of a policy that if they cancel it, another streaming service can't show it for 2 years. Now they can show it on a broadcast outlet.
Right. Okay.
The 2 years does not cover that. The door remains open, however, for a non-streaming service like a cable or broadcast network, like the CBS-owned The CW and Pop TV, have both reportedly expressed interest, even as both possibilities are considered long shots. Sony is also campaigning to Netflix to make an exception to its stringent rules, given the show's platform for underrepresented voices and catering to underserved audiences. It says Netflix will no longer have exclusive rights to the show by mid-June. So, Netflix not having exclusive rights to the show by mid-June, I don't know what that if that's the expiration of the 2 years, or if that's something else entirely, but it's a complicated situation if we're going to get One Day at a Time back, but I don't think that's going to happen. Art, we got next.
Well, we can always just hope for the best.
Yeah.
Okay. Aladdin tracking for $85 to $115 million opening. 2 months out from the film's opening, the earliest long-range tracking figures for Disney and Aladdin are already in, and it's looking to be the juggernaut that Dumbo wasn't last week. Ouch, that's just hurtful. Box Office Pro reports that Guy Ritchie's live-action take on the 1992 cartoon is on track for a 70 to 95 million opening day domestically for 3 day and 85 to 115 for the 4 day Memorial Day holiday weekend. There's still 2 months between then and now, with Disney still having plenty of time to raise awareness. The full trailer the other week appears to have also turned some of the negative buzz around. While the whole Friend Like Me sequence was just screened for exhibitors at CinemaCon yesterday, which suggests the studio is quite confident Aladdin hits theaters on May 24th. Right around the corner. I still think the genie looks dumb, but we'll see what happens. Something about Blue Will Smith just seems odd.
Yeah. All right, so I have a story that actually concerns Disney. Okay, this is from BusinessInsider.com. 9 confirmed movies and TV shows Disney's making for its Netflix competitor. So I remember we were talking about, you know, they could just throw out their currently, you know, produced library content as opposed to making new things. You know, it's kind of like, you know, to kind of get people to, you know, there's going to be people that are going to go in on it anyways, but maybe if people on the fence, you need new series, that kind of stuff. So here's some things that are, some of are confirmed. Some of them are kind of, I don't know, whispers or rumors or that kind of thing. All right, so under confirmed, we have the Loki series. We also have The Mandalorian. Now, when they say series, I think they're thinking like 6 to 8 episodes, and then that's it.
Okay.
Kind of thing. Not like a big, long, like, season four of Loki.
Right.
So there's not a whole lot about Loki. For The Mandalorian, it's coming from Jon Favreau. But they are going to have episodes. There's going to be episodes will be directed by Bryce Dallas Howard, the star of Jurassic World. Taika Waititi, who did Thor Ragnarok. But Pedro Pascal is going to be playing the Mandalorian. And it says he's in Narcos, but he was also Oberyn Martell in Game of Thrones. A Cassian Andor Star Wars series.
Interesting.
So they are the Star Wars website is describing it as a spy thriller that follows the adventures of Cassian Andor during the formative years of the Rebellion. Next, we have a new season of Star Wars: The Clone Wars. And so they're going to have a 12-episode, 7-season.
Wow.
And I just realized they did the same thing twice. They're also talking... this is... Did we pass confirmed, non-confirmed? No, these are all confirmed. A Monsters, Inc. series.
Interesting. Okay.
We also have something that I was not expecting at all. High School Musical, the series. Disney announced the stars of its upcoming High School Musical series for Disney Plus in February. The cast includes a group of young up-and-coming actors such as Joshua Bassett from Stuck in the Middle, Frankie Rodriguez from Modern Family, and Olivia Rodrigo from Bizardvark.
Nice.
Okay, I'm sure you've watched any one of those shows. I've watched Modern Family.
Watched a ton of Bizardvark.
Okay, all right. I'm glad I put this in then. All right, a Lady and the Tramp live-action remake. So, someone asked Bob Iger if this movie was going to be for release in theater, and he says, no, we were never going to do it for theatrical release. A movie called Noelle about Santa's Daughter, starring Anna Kendrick.
Interesting.
Togo, starring Willem Dafoe. The movie tells the true story of the 1925 Gnome Serum Run, when 20 mushers raced across Alaska by dog sled to transport an antitoxin for a deadly bacteria that was ravaging the small town. And so those are all confirmed. Here's a reported, a Marvel series starring Scarlet Witch, another Marvel series with Bucky and Falcon, a Marvel What If animated series, Book of Enchantment, which is a series that will star some of Disney's most recognizable villains like Ursula and Maleficent. It's based on Serena Valentino's Villains book series. A remake of Sword in the Stone. And the last thing they have here is our Deadline report in February that Disney was developing several priority movie projects for the streaming service. Don Quixote, The Paper Magician, Stargirl, a Three Men and a Baby remake, and Timmy Failure from Tom McCarthy, the director of Spotlight. And there are also rumors that they're going to do a romantic comedy TV series based on High Fidelity.
Wow.
So yeah, there's a lot of stuff that you're coming on Disney Plus.
Yeah, well, $14 billion goes a long way.
Yeah. All right, what you got next?
All right. Okay, so the new Akira to shoot in California, the long gestating live-action Hollywood adaptation of Katsuhiro Otomo's iconic six-book manga and 1988 anime film Akira took a big step forward today towards reality. The California Film Commission has announced that the Leonardo DiCaprio-produced project for Warner Brothers will shoot in California and receive an $18.5 million tax credit. By far the biggest of the allocations from the CFC revealed today as part of the State Film TV Tax Credit Program 2.0. 17 other titles made onto the list. They are tipped to generate an estimated $408 million total in qualified expenditures. Akira reportedly generated an estimated $92 million in qualified spending and is scheduled to film entirely in the U.S. state over the course of 71 filming days. Set in the wake of the Third World War, the story in the remake takes place in the rebuilt New Manhattan, shifting from Neo-Tokyo of the original, where a leader of a biker gang saves his friend from a medical experiment. The project has been in the works for a decade or so, with the likes of Dalmé Colette Serra, The Shallows, Jordan Peele, Us, Justin Lin, Fast Five, Daniel Espinosa, Life, and David Sandberg, Shazam, all attached at one point or another. At last report, Taika Waititi was selected to direct, while Andrew Lazar and Jennifer Davison are producing, and indications today that that's still the case. So, live action Akira coming and going to shoot in California.
All right, so it wouldn't be a Jeff news segment without an article from Cracked.
Okay.
So here we go. 5 ways we ruin entertainment for ourselves. Just before the World Wide Web exploded in the mid-90s, they used to talk about how we'd soon have an astonishing 500 channels on our televisions. And everyone joked about what an impossibly huge amount of content that would be. Today, there are probably 100 times that many YouTube channels just recapping Game of Thrones episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But humans aren't known for their restraint, so our natural reaction to this absurd abundance of stuff is to watch of stuff to watch is to kind of ruin it for ourselves. So number 5, binge watching is scientifically the worst way to consume anything.
What?
Nothing says we have to watch an entire season of a Netflix show in one 13-hour session on a Friday night, but we're going to do it anyway because it's the only thing that quiets the awful thoughts in our heads. And it's not like Netflix has discouraged the practice. So they have a tweet from Netflix, Ready, Set, Binge, hashtag Stranger Things. Binge watching is a part of entertainment culture now. Countless news stories, articles, and ads reference it, almost in the cutesiest way possible. It's the quirky new way kids are consuming media. It's also about the worst way to watch something if you actually want to enjoy it. But don't take my word for it. Let's ask our old pal science. According to a University of Melbourne study, binge watching not only reduces your ability to remember what you just watched, but it actually decreases your enjoyment of the thing you're cramming down your gullet like a seagull swallowing a hot dog. I could go on about how we should slow down and savor the finer things in life, or I can just point out that the human brain simply physically needs time to process things. Think about it. How many times has your opinion of a movie or show changed only after you had some time to stew on it? A plot turn that feels like an emotional punch in the gut loses its impact when you're immediately on to the next episode. Wow, that was quite a twist. I wonder what will... Oh, wait, they're resolving it right now. Okay. Of course, there's even the more obvious fact that sitting alone on a butt-sweat-adapted couch working your way through 552 minutes of Umbrella Academy just isn't good for you. Binge-watching has been connected to poor diet and obesity. Also, sitting in front of a flickering rectangle until 3 in the morning is shockingly a recipe for sleep deprivation. And the CDC and WHO have declared an outright epidemic. So yeah, it turns out that there might have been a reason the term binge had nothing but negative connotations until marketers branded it cool 5 years ago. But part of the reason we can't give it up is, number 4, we get stressed when unwatched content piles up. Gamers already know what it's like to have a pile of shame. A study a few years ago found that only 30% of games sold on Steam are ever completed, and more than 20% are never played at all. Ask almost any gamer and you'll find that there's a weird guilt or anxiety that comes with that, either because you feel like you wasted the money or you just failed to see something through to the completion. I never got those 30 Nuka-Cola bottles back to Ronald. Somewhere around the invention of the TiVo, everyone began to feel this twinge of anxiety around TV, about TV, the sense that stuff is piling up. If you try to remain relatively culturally literate, you probably have multiple piles of shame at this point. Your gaming pile, your TV pile, your book pile. Some studies show that more than half of downloaded ebooks go unread. I'm pretty sure that was an issue my parents had. They didn't feel like it was a personal failing if they missed an episode of Cheers. And remember that platforms are geared around fostering that twinge of anxiety. These companies know they're in a bitter fight for a finite pool of the audience's free time. Netflix says their biggest competition isn't Hulu, but Fortnite. Games are designed to be grindy because they're not only keeping you away from other games, they want you to keep you off Instagram and YouTube, making sure you're not neglecting your game job to spend time with your family or some other nonsense. So why is it bad to have tons of choices, you ask? There may be 100 pizza places on Uber Eats, but we don't feel some pressure to order from all of them. Sure, but when it comes to medium, there's another factor at play. Number 3, there's social pressure to have an opinion about everything. Popular culture exists primarily so we have something to talk about to coworkers without actually letting them know anything important about us. It's a chance to have a strong opinion on something, but without any stakes attached. A buffer that keeps us from having to hear about our cubicle mates' politics. I'm sure Hope can get this report done before the weekend. That's when Kanon is going to arrest Congress? There's always been some fear of being left out of the conversation after some huge TV event. What with everybody around the water cooler talking about the MASH finale or whatever. But thanks to social media, you can now multiply that pressure 1,000 times over. Especially if you hated a particular episode slash character slash season and everyone else seems to like it or vice versa. You have to go out on the internet and fight for your side. And if you do manage to make your case via timely resident comments, the chances are your reward will be lots of people yelling at you. Being a fan means taking one side in a very stupid war. Live tweeting a thing you're watching is the equivalent of doing a book report while reading the book in front of the classroom of the school's snarkiest bullies. This also adds to the time pressure mentioned above. The window where anyone gives a damn about those thoughts is perilously narrow. Sure, you could start watching Game of Thrones now, but how many Twitter hearts are your jokes about shitty direwolf effects and Ned Stark's gullibility going to get in 2019? And if you're current on the show, God help you if you watch a new episode even one day later than everybody else. Overt spoilers will be trending on Twitter within minutes. Hashtag OMG White Walkers are robots. It once again starts to feel like a job, an obligation to the show, and even though we're the ones that paid for it. Number two, we're always dividing our attention and missing key details. It's true that in the olden days, you can find someone sitting in front of the TV reading a magazine, barely noticing what's happening on the screen. But this was usually because you had next to zero control over what came on. You sat through the ancient sitcom rerun waiting for Star Trek, and most people were limited in how many screens they had. Reading was all about mom can do when dad was watching his golf, but a crazy person would have paid to see a movie, then sat down in a theater and pulled out a paperback novel. What we're doing today has to be closer to that, ordering up content we specifically chose and paid for, then grabbing our phones to browse Twitter while it plays in the background. Studies show that 70% of us are regularly staring at a second screen when watching TV. Bump that up to literally 80% for millennial types. And once again, our old friend science says that this is making us enjoy it less. A Dutch study has found people are less able to retain or understand what they're watching when their attention is divided between multiple screens. Doesn't matter if what you're looking up on your phone is related to the thing you're watching, it's still just as distracting. We're gobbling up more media than ever, but we're not actually following most of it, as exemplified by the popularity of Ending of X Explained articles and videos. Watch an explainer for the ending of Split while you're ignoring the ending of Glass. Of course, your phone also serves as a reminder that you should be devoting part of your brain to the post-episode discussion you'll be having with internet strangers. Hey, Thanos kind of looks like a California raisin. Is that something? I could Photoshop that. Oh, wait. Why is everyone turning into ash? Okay. And now, number one, and this is really the high point of the article for me. Obsessing over behind-the-scenes drama can ruin immersion. Time for a shocking mid-column revelation. I'm a pro wrestling fan. You may not know this, but your average hardcore wrestling fan spends as much or more time following the behind-the-scenes dirt as the actual wrestling. Who's in and out of favor? Who's injecting which substances into where? And other backstage drama. That now seems to be standard for avid fans of anything in the social media era. For every drop of content we consume, we suck up buckets of rumors, speculation, and deep dive criticism. Okay, now a show of hands. How many actually watch Justice League and Solo as movies rather than examining them like crime scenes? Was that sequence part of the reshoots? Was that shitty line reading the reason they hired the new Han Solo guy and acting coach? Is this shot in Justice League pinpointing the moment Ben Affleck loses the will to live? Sure, it's a way to squeeze some entertainment value out of the movie or show, which otherwise offers little. But it's not like we don't do the same with the stuff we actually like. There's a tendency to immediately race the internet after watching to make sure we really did like it, or were right to like it, or if we need permission from pallid YouTubers sitting in front of shelves of action figures. Instead of enjoying it as an audience, you're studying it like an inspector or an assembly line scanning for defects. It can be fun, but it's not the same kind of fun as just losing yourself in a story. As part of the overthinking pop culture industry, I can tell you that the pressure to crank out opinions, dissections, and rumors is relentless. By the time you've written Star Wars The Last Jedi review, you need to be working on your editorial about the backlash, and when you're done with that, it's on to the Episode 9 rumor roundup. None of us are trying to ruin entertainment for you any more than Netflix wants you to feel oddly empty after blasting through 12 hours of the show. It's just that the audience habits that bring the most success for content providers probably aren't the same ones that make you happiest. Navigating the gap between those two things, which makes you happy versus what a corporation is insisting you do, seems like a fairly important skill in 2019, regardless of your media consumption habits. And so this article I greatly enjoyed is by Nathan Birch. You can find it on Cracked. But five things we're doing are the five ways we ruin entertainment for ourselves.
Man, I love binging. I just don't. Maybe it's, you know, as I get older, you know, I think you have that gap between. That's not time to absorb the episode. That's time to forget what happened the last episode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. you do it all at once. You know, you remember the beginning when you get to the end. I don't know. I think I disagree, but you know, the world's a changing. And we're along for the ride.
Yeah.
okay, so. Methuselah redeveloped for Michael B. Jordan. Warner Brothers Pictures is set to redevelop its long-in-the-works Methuselah film, with the project now being reconfigured as a star vehicle for Michael B. Jordan. The actor will play a man who has managed to stay alive for over four centuries without showing the physical signs of age. In the time, he's accumulated vast intellectual knowledge from multiple languages to the sciences, as well as survival skills. The plan is for a potential franchise with a rich mythology. Jordan, David Heyman, and Jeffrey Clifford will produce. Warners have been trying to get the project running for years, with various writers and actors attached at one time or another, including Tom Cruise. Jordan is developing Black Leopard. Red Wolf is attached to star in Denzel Washington's Journal for Jordan and Jared McCarthy's Silver Bear. So, Methuselah, Michael B. Jordan. I'm interested. I'm definitely interested. Michael B. Jordan is very much a rising star right now. I like the idea of this immortal person, calling him Methuselah. So we shall see where this goes, but I'm interested.
Interesting. It's interesting because I have a friend that just got his book published. It's called The Quarter Year Man. His name is Eldon Calloway, and it's about because he was born on February 29th, and so the story is basically about a guy that's lived four times as long as other people.
Right.
And I guess he's seen some things. And so it's more of a spy thriller than anything else. But it kind of piqued my interest when you were talking about Methuselah.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. All right. That was my last news story. So what do you have left?
Okay. Then I will finish up with Endgame pre-sales crashing ticketing sites. After only the first hour availability this morning, pre-release tickets for the first session of Avengers Endgame set a new record for mobile ticket sales, mobile ticket retailer Atom. Sales have been hard and fast for the Marvel Studios title this morning, and stats indicate it sold three times more tickets on Atom in the first hour of pre-sales than Avengers Infinity War did around the same time last year. The film is also outpacing the first hour sales for Star Wars The Last Jedi. Fandango is also reporting record hour sales for the project. The demand has been so overwhelming that many sites in this field have crashed, making it highly difficult for fans to secure their seats. Some ticket buyers are getting a 503 error code on AMC, and some users on Atom and Fandango have also had difficulty. Avengers Endgame opens in cinemas on April 26th. So just 3 weeks away, and it is selling like hotcakes. And we can wrap up there, sir.
Yeah, you know, it's... And this is less... news for you than it is for me, but we're about 9 days away from Game of Thrones season 8 starting. So a little side story about Game of Thrones. My daughter ripped my heart out about 2 months ago when she said that she's planning to watch Game of Thrones with her best friend and her aunt and her newborn. Kind of thing. And so we didn't hear anything. So I called a friend. It's because I don't have HBO. I was kind of thinking about subscribing to HBO just for Game of Thrones. But I figured I can just do a watch party at my friend's house.
Right.
And then my daughter got all bent out of shape because I thought we were going to watch it together. And I said, no, the last time I remember you talking about it, you were going to watch it with your friend. So you're the one that, you know, that violated the pact. So I don't know.
You drew first blood, not me.
Yeah, I don't know what's gonna happen, but anyways. So yeah, Game of Thrones. All right, so that's gonna do it for this particular episode of Backseat Box Office. So everyone, thank you for listening to us prattle on about all kinds of different stuff. The website is backseatproducers.com. The voicemail number that's listed on the website is 618-207-4794. That's 618-207-4794. So you can call and leave us a voicemail, just like Tad and Sabrina did. Also, thank you two for the voicemail. We are looking forward to the next one, as always. Other than that, take care of yourselves, go watch a movie, and tell us about it. Art, what do you have to say?
Good night, everybody.